Okay, welcome back to another episode. I'm super excited today because it's been a little while since we've had anybody on the podcast due to me moving and life stuff. So I'm very, very excited to have Myola Woods here with me. And she is an incredible woman who is an author, an EMDR practitioner, which I absolutely love. I love EMDR. She is also a certified sexological body worker and somatic sex educator with extensive experience in education, body work, and energetics. Myola specializes in teaching individuals and couples the art of connection, creating and cultivating the choice of arousal to deepen intimacy, sensation and pleasure. As a sexual being, mother of four, now adult children, and pleasure enthusiast, Myola appreciates the time constraints. I love that too, very much, deeply, because as a mom, like, trying to fit everything in is insane. So constraints daily and social pressures that can play havoc on our erotic lives. Love that so much. Myola teaches ways to explore and enhance your lovemaking in everyday life using techniques and practices that can turn you and your life on. Oh my God, so good. So, Myola, how are you? Please.
Oh, thank you for having me as a guest. I'm very excited to have this conversation as well. I mean, I feel that we have lots to talk about and lots to share and to speak about to someone else who works and lives in the lands of the taboo is fascinating for me, and so I'm very excited. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure, isn't it?
It's always a pleasure.
I love it so much. It's so good. So tell us about, like, how did you actually get into all of this? This is it, like the EMDR, sexologist, body work and energetics. It's insane. Like, everything that you're doing and being and just integrating in your own life is amazing. So we would love to hear, how did you, as a mom of four as well. Thank you.
So the energetic stuff is probably my oldest sort of modality or my oldest learning. You know, I grew up as a child, kind of knowing too much and could feel things, and, you know, it was, and adults don't really like that. So adults don't really like children who are know more or can sense things or know, you know, can feel things. So it wasn't, I didn't realize it was such a gift until much later. But really early, like in my late teens, I mean, we're going back a few years now, so it wasn't. It wasn't like it is now, where kind of energetics was everywhere. It was kind of like in a forbidden sort of area. Going into the energetics and working with as a healer. I guess the part that I do is that I study for myself and then take it to the world. That's kind of what I've always done. So I started off in the energetics. And then I did massage for a straight kind of line, like for something to, I guess, bring people, you know, through the door. And then once they come in, they feel safe. Then everything else kind of was able to open up. Then I also, in this time, was always really curious about how trauma, and I may not have had exactly the right words that we do now, but I was always interested in trauma and how it impacted our energy field and how it impacted our beliefs and how we interacted in the world. Like, it's always been something I've been very curious about, which probably says something about my childhood in there. So
yeah, I think that's like everyone that I talk to is like, oh, yeah, I became a psychologist because it was actually for me. I was like, oh, yeah, I can see that.
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
It's like we all just want to heal ourselves, so we end up learning all of this beautiful magic in the world, and we get to integrate it and help heal ourselves. Then we get to help heal other people too. It's an incredible thing.
Yeah, that is the magic. That is the magic of. And I know that, you know, well, working in it is not everyone's cup of tea, but I kind of, you know, went into, birthing. I took up, even before I had my children, I was very much into how pregnancy massage and working with women, you know, pre and postpartum, and kind of, I guess I just, I love that process. I love that we're creators. I love that we grow humans. Like, and we're not sick. We're growing humans. We're pregnant. We're having babies. It's such a magical thing,
isn't it? Like, I just, like, when you really take your mind up and your brain, like, I don't even know, I get a little bird's eye perspective on it, but then you think about how the body actually creates a baby, it's like, it's just magic. You don't have to think about it. It's the crazy thing. You don't have to think about making a baby. It just happens. Can, for most people, you know, obviously there's struggles with that.
For the most part, I mean, and that's why we do have interventions and we do have hospitals, and so I'm not suggesting that they're not amazing, but for the most part, we have our body's wisdom knows what to do, and so that was always to support, that was always beautiful for me. And I, you know, and amongst that, I had some trouble having an orgasm with a partner, so not orgasms themselves, but just with a partner. So I had a few intimacy issues. So I worked along those, and so one of the, you know, one of the big things that I, you know, help with people is to help them feel, help them sensations, help them have orgasms, help them, you know, if they're having a little orgasm, to have full body orgasms, to have. To, you know, get them, to allow them to feel, to move past pain. That is something I really work a lot with women on. So Jen, so that's, I think, is having that interest in birthing has sort of led me to still, the majority of the clients that I work with are still women. I work with couples and I do work with some men, but most of it is in, and mostly I think the other part that it brings me is that women in their own way or in their own juiciness are amazing sexual beings.
We've been so conditioned, haven't we, to like limitation of just clitoral orgasms, and it's just like that's so short term. It's like, what about like a throatgasm or a heartgasm or a nipplegasm? I was saying this the other day on my social media and I'm like, you can have so many different orgasms and it just like is never ending. We're so expansive in our being naturally as women that I think society and the way we're conditioned actually suppresses that ability for us.
Sure.
And like that's just my perception on my experience on the, on it all is that that's it's the conditioning, you know.
For sure. So I'm always really keen to move that myth away, and I'm always really keen to show that we are totally orgasmic sexual beings, and how much pleasure that brings to the world when the women and the mothers are like, just that's a different paradigm for us to live in, instead of, you know, talking about just having clitoral orgasms. I love that. I just love hearing all the different orgasms.
I know, it's so good.
Someone else saying it is, yes.
I think one time, like, I remember I was out with an ex-partner of mine and all he did was grab my throat out in the middle of the, like, shopping center, and he just grabbed it like that. I don't even know why we did it, but... And I just felt all this energy going all the way down into the front of my... I was like, oh, my God, this is absolutely incredible. Just because I could, it was just like having just a mini little orgasm in the middle of a shopping center just from him touching me. It was amazing. I loved it so much.
Yes. And did anyone see? Was there any, like, how did you feel?
I have no idea. I think we were kind of like really wrapped up in our own little world. Does it really matter if anyone's seen or not? I'm not really like concerned about those things. And like the feminine, the masculine, when they get together like that, I'm able to let go of that knowingness, you know, where it's him to take control of the environment that I'm in to keep me safe, where I just completely let go of my mind and I'm just like receiving all of this. So it was great.
How beautiful. Have you always been like that? Like, has that always been your way?
No, not at all. And that's why I love doing what I love doing too, because, you know, like you've had your own experiences as well, I assure you, with the different kinds of orgasms that you can actually have and the way it invigorates your body and just something, you feel it awaken something within you and you're just like, oh my God, it's just like so much more pleasure and joy that you get from just these little beautiful experiences.
Yeah, for sure. It's there's a, you know, a wealth of orgasms to have and potential. And I think, yes, our programming tells us that we're supposed to have clitoral orgasms or even limited to genital orgasms. Whereas we, you know, in the right vibration, I often, you know, think that or feel that it is orgasmicness and orgasms are a vibration. And once you're in that vibration, it doesn't matter whether you touch somebody's knee or touch somebody's ear or somebody's genitals. Like it's a flow and a frequency and a vibration. And if you're in it, then whatever you're doing is in that vibe, in that. And it makes such a difference to, you know, even mundane things. I find that, you know, doing the dishes and folding the clothes, if you've got that spark, I like to think of it, it's like a spark.
Mm-hmm,
you've got that, whatever you're doing is amazing.
It just like comes from within, doesn't it? Like it can come from within. I do know from what I have noticed is that you can be like, because obviously being in your feminine energy, and the more you can surround yourself with very masculine men, the energy you can get off them can enliven you more. Like it awakens you in a deeper way than, you know, if he's more in his masculine, it just can awaken you more. Does that make sense?
Sure. So yeah. What I'm hearing, though, is that I suppose maybe breaking that down a little bit is that masculine energy, that safety, that security, that, and so therefore feeling that gives you permission, whether it's a verbal or it's energetic, because you can feel it, is it gives you permission to expand and open and surrender and know that you're going to be looked after. So then you can just be and receive. That's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. But even like going out during your day, let's say, and like I've been out during the day where a man will just do something and I'm just like, woof, like it just comes and hits me. I'm like, woof, thank you for that. Like, it's just so being so open to like receive that beautiful energy from men, you know, and it's really invigorating for, I think, females. And when we do awaken those, you know, like the energetics inside of just our body, not just our genitals, that we can receive so much more pleasure from so many other things, like you said, like doing the washing, or it doesn't necessarily have to come from men, let's say, but like doing all of those kinds of things too. And even dancing. Love dancing.
Dancing's great. Yes. I think that we've come to a place where women think we tend to think we have to do it all.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to grow the babies, we have to feed the babies, we have to look after the babies, we have to do all the housework. We now, you know, there's a, you know, a large push for, you know, having careers and having, I'm not for or against any of those things. But all of those things add up to a lot when we're trying to do it all on our own.
Yes.
So I think that we forget that receiving from, well, probably receiving from anyone, but that receiving from a man, I think we've forgotten that in there a little bit.
Definitely. I can 100% agree with you. And I think doing all of those things takes us away from the body and puts us in our mind. And then we get so like overwhelmed and drained and like so stuck up here instead of just it being in the body, you know, and a lot, I'm awakening that. Not to say that being in the mind is bad at all, because it's not, but, you know, doing all of those things, we can get so caught up here that we're forgetting down here, and it takes us so far away from our feminine energy. And takes us so far away from that, like you said, receiving as well, that pleasure.
Yeah. I mean, our mind is useful. It's great. But it's not where, like, we're here on earth as physical beings, as mammals. We, you know, our sensations, our expression is through the body. Mm. So, you know, often when people, you know, they can't feel or they're numb or they're, it's because they're not in their body. They're in their heads, or they're off planning next week, or they're doing the shopping, or they're whatever it is they're doing, or they're checked out.
Exactly.
You know, they're disassociated because they've put sensuality or sexuality into their, like, it's a chore and it's something I have to do, so I'll just check out.
But yeah.
That does not equate for a good relationship with our body, and to feel sexy or feel sensual or be it, you know,
Yeah, I definitely feel that, and I can resonate with that deeply, and I'm sure you can too, after like having children and then going from that polarity of, you know, being there and having to look after the kids, but then also, okay, let's try and shift further into my body and have a little bit more fun here and be, you know, more playful in the body.
I think it is about playfulness. Do you think?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. It can be really difficult, I think, at times, especially like you said, with the work and having to do all of these things, it can definitely take us away from being in the body and in that play and in that pleasure and in that enjoyment and in the receiving side of things as well. Yeah, I definitely want to ask you though, like your energetics, what have your experiences been? Tell me.
Oh, energetics. Yeah. So, yeah, in the beginning, I mean, body speak to me. So they send me pictures, they talk to me, they tell me where to put my hands, so that's really nice. Mm. And so really nice in intimate moments as well, knowing, you know, having that intuition, having that opportunity with my own hands. The energetics of, you know, connecting here on the earth and also in other dimensions and other planes and other, and how does that work in our bodies and how does that work? You know, what sort of knowledge can we pick up? What sort of things are we still hanging on to? What sort of things are still keeping us back? You know, one of the groovy things that I don't actually usually talk about, so here we go. We'll not talk about it. Like,
I'm so excited.
because I would class myself as being able to communicate and interact with multi dimensions, and so one of the things really early, like, so in my early career I did lots of things with angels and dragons and you know, allies and plant medicine and all sorts of things. And then I wondered how I would integrate that into sexuality, because I just love, for me, working in any sort of sexuality adds another dimension anyway. Like, it's such a different, it's like a core, it's the core spark of us. So it's always got an added bonus. And so I started to take, I suppose, embodied meditations or journeys could be another word, at festivals. I would do this journey and take people and embodiment to other dimensions of, you know, sometimes it was archangels and sometimes it was dragons and sometimes, you know, Pegasus gets a mention in there somewhere. And
the only time I remember Pegasus is from that like childhood cartoon.
Well,
Hercules, that's the one. Such a good cartoon as well.
It was a good cartoon. But the erotic Pegasus is probably slightly different to that. And taking them on these erotic journeys.
Ooh.
And embodying the journey, so what is the piece? What is the piece around sexuality from a different place, a different dimension, and bringing that in? And then getting to interact in a group from that place and space. And I suppose, you know, people probably use that as fantasy, whereas it's probably for me much more an embodied process than a fantasy. Now I know that they've also increased the amount of sex toys that have dragons and unicorns. And so I feel like I was, you know, probably before my time. And but that's so the energetics of that is like that's where it's not limited to just being here.
Yeah.
It's limited, you know, we have access to multi-dimensional beings. If you've got any Men in Black fans, I feel that, you know, I think it's one of the last scenes where he opens up a letterbox and a post box, and there's millions and millions and millions of galaxies and universes and things, and that's
how I see
the possibilities universe of our world.
Oh, like it's so expansive. If we as human beings, like in our physical body, can produce this kind of energy within, can't imagine what's without, because it's like so within without, isn't it? Oh, what's that word? I can't remember how you say the thing. But as within, so without. That is what I was trying to say. But yeah, I always like thought Men in Black was, you know, a little key to everything going on.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a very interesting experience. And I can imagine like taking people on this like really profound journey for them.
Yeah, it's also adds a bit of fun and a bit of you know, that sort of fantasy world. It adds a bit of eroticism that we didn't think we had. So it's great. And then energetics for me now, probably working with people is I work a lot with trauma, and I work a lot with, you know, sexual violence and abuse, and how that is stored in the body, stored in the pelvis in particular. So it's handy to have, I guess, lots of information. Like, so I'm talking to the body, I'm talking to the spirit, the soul, I'm talking to the human who's here as well. I'm gathering information and working, you know, on a lot of layers and a lot of, you know, there's a lot of capacity then there for healing and to find out what's really going on and then move it and shift it.
Oh, I love that, because we're just so much multidimensional than just like this 3D reality, right?
Yeah.
And I just love that you go through every layer of like our humanness. It's not, because it's more than 3D. That you're able to go through every layer to find the key, like the little thing that's triggering whatever the physical problem in this reality is, actually why it's happening for them. That's a really beautiful thing that you get to do. There was a thing that you said about like trauma being stored in the hips and in the like in the pelvis, and I also from my experience and also just working with people too, working with women and having them have like even emotions get stored in the womb space as well, you know, and trauma all in the womb and in the vagina and this kind of stuff, and not being able to orgasm and like not have internal orgasms or pain when they're having sex. And it can definitely be coming from a place of something that's actually happened.
For sure. And it's a big bony structure, and it's got lots of muscles, and it's got lots of and lots of nerve endings. So when we, you know, we're kind of built for pleasure and we're built for orgasms, because we have, you know, our vagus nerve comes down, you know, it doesn't actually go through the spine, as you know, and it comes down the body and it sits on top of, like it ends the top of the cervix. And then we have, on top of that, we then have the, you know, the clitoral nerves and the clitoris with the, you know, 8,000 or 10,000, sometimes I think they're increasing it, you know, nerve endings on it. Like we're built for pleasure. But as soon as one of those things is kind of out, then it affects the flow as well. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it can be quite, I want to say quite physical, that there's something happening, that the, you know, the psoas muscle is not quite aligned, and so therefore that affects the hormones, it affects the blood supply, it affects the nerve endings, it affects a whole lot of things. So when you can start to work, you know, on the muscles, you know, when people come and see me and we do sort of pelvic work and internal work, they often, you know, it's a bit like a shoulder. When you go and see someone for the first time, or you go and see, you haven't had a massage, you go to the chiropractor, and you walk in and you're a bit off. And then when you leave, everything's kind of back to normal. And so people's pelvises and people's vulvas change as they release things, and as there's more blood flow, and I think as women, we're afraid of blood flow. We're afraid.
why do you say that?
Because I don't think we don't see pictures usually. We don't see a lot of pictures of really aroused, engorged vulvas.
And I love really aroused, engorged vulvas. That's not coming from a bisexual place. I just love it. I'm just thinking of my own. I'm like, oof, yes, thank you.
Yeah. And I imagine it's why we do the things that we do. I love them as well. I don't think we get encouraged to look at it, and I don't think we get encouraged to feel it. And also, you know, there's lots of stories about having more tightness. And I think what we don't understand is that essentially to have more tightness, there needs to be more blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've got more blood flow in there, then you can feel more, it's tight, it happens. So the more aroused somebody is, the more engorged somebody is, the tighter and better it will feel.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like women's like vaginas can like mold themselves around men's like phalluses, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're saying, like, yeah, the blood flow gets to go down there, and it can mold itself around the phallus. But it's not like, because there are some women who have like tightness, for example, but it's actually because of trauma, not because it's engorged and happy and ready to like squirt everywhere. Let's say it's actually tight because it's more of a painful experience and more of a like holding on, like I don't really want this to happen, but it's happening, and I'm kind of trying to make myself open up, but I can't make myself open up enough. Do you know what I mean? And like that can come from that place instead of like this really high blood flow going to there, where it's actually just molded to, I would say, the phallus, and it is in essentially tight, but it's not that like that other way, because I think there's two different types of tightness, you know.
There is, and one is it's kind of, it feels more like an injury to me. Like if you've got, you know, a sore bicep or something, and somebody's trying to poke at it, you don't want to do that. But I think because you know we can't see the vagina and the pelvis, we get a little bit. You know, our mind is distorted with how it is. If we could see an injury on our arm or a leg, we probably wouldn't try and stick something in it. And we would go and get it fixed. Mm. We would go and do something about it. We would have it, you know. But I think because we don't talk about the subjects, it gets left. And people have pain and they don't talk about it, or they just think they're broken, or there's something wrong with them. And often it's none of those things, and it's the, you know, working on the trauma or working on the muscles and also then relaxing, because also then, as you know, then the brain starts to tell you, as soon as you start to move towards intimacy, the brain starts to go and the body starts to go, oh my God, are we going to get hurt? Is this going to hurt?
Yeah,
Am I
that
going to be
freaks out.
And so you're preempting them as well. And so it's shutting down as well. So that kind of relaxing and opening takes some time, as it would if you had an injury on your arm or your leg.
Definitely. I can hear you in that, and I can definitely like see in my past experiences in times where I haven't been very like open, I would say, with men, and or just allowed men to, it was consensual, but not really, like maybe I just really wasn't that full on ready, you know, but I also was so detached from my own physical body that I probably didn't even know in myself and was just accepting like basic, I want to say like just basic, like, okay, I was more doing it because I wanted to please them instead of actually having a conjoined experience where we get to share this magical energy and profound like experience together, you know, where we get to have an orgasm that goes from me to you to me. Like,
I love it.
There was something around this I wanted to ask you about. In your experience working with like women and like being a mother, like yourself being a mom, me being a mother, so I never got into tantra before I actually had children. I actually got into tantra after I had kids. So my birthing experiences, my son's was amazing. My daughter's was not so much at all. It's very traumatic. And like over time, just doing tantra has helped me like be able to heal certain aspects of that within myself and open my hips and obviously receive orgasms in many different ways, as you've heard on here. However, my thought in this was like, what if a woman comes in and has had a traumatic birth? So like I got an episiotomy. That's something that on a physical level you can't get rid of, right? Like maybe not. I mean, like I've seen, I'm not so 100% sure. I've never seen anybody grow an arm back, but the possibilities, hey. So my point there is that like, let's say I don't really want to tell everyone the gory details.
I'm happy to tell my story about an episiotomy. It was a stitches. I'm happy to tell my story.
Yeah, same with mine. I'm just thinking like, does everyone really want to know what my vagina really looks like?
Probably. I think that sharing these stories makes it okay.
Sharing is caring. I'm not
okay for the people that are sitting there going at this moment going, oh, I think I had one of those, I think I've got that, oh, I wonder if they're gonna, oh,
yeah, I get what your point. It's just that like, would my future husband want me to share the fact that my vagina looks like that to the whole world? I'm not sure. That's the only thought that goes through my head. So yeah, anyway, you can share your episiotomy journey, but like I'm just saying, like it was a very traumatic experience for me for my daughter's birth, and the episiotomy caused me a lot of problems and a lot of issues internally, externally, this kind of stuff. Obviously, I've done a lot of healing around it, but like for women, it can be a really traumatic experience. And like how do you go about like helping women in those areas? Because it, you know, it is a trauma.
Absolutely, it's a trauma. Absolutely, absolutely. And so, and scar tissue, so no, you probably can't grow it back the way that it was, but certainly you can work with the tissues so that they have more elasticity, have more feeling, no numbness. Mm-hmm. You can certainly do that. I was born with forceps and as an episiotomy, and my mother went through hell. I'm still, I turned 51 next year, next week. So I still seeing an amazing osteo. It still has issues physically on me, like being born that way.
So like with the forceps, like pulling forceps out. Oh, wow. That's insane.
I've got a scar on my hand. But she as she works on me, and as time progresses, the parts, and you know, I've been working on birthing stuff for a very long time.
Yeah.
There is still amazing shifts that happen with that. So I think if you can just continue working on it, and I think it is traumatic, and it is, it's, you know, it's a very personal area, and it's birthing. And I think that, you know, we're told it's supposed to be magical, and I'm not saying it isn't, but, and so when it's not, though, I think we internalize that and we internalize it and go, well, I must have done something. I mustn't be a woman, or I mustn't be, you know, people with these sections have had, you know, I mean, that's why we have interventions nowadays, you know, so babies don't die. I mean, and we now have the capability of being able to, I guess, remedy some of the things if you don't get it. Like, I can still have work on my head. So I came into the world like that. So maybe not surprisingly, I want to work in birthing and colors and genitals, and, you know, because they excite me. And then having my own children, I did have stitches. And to be honest, I mean, as you grow, you learn. I probably wouldn't have the stitches now. I didn't have stitches with my last two, and I said no to one of them. I said no to the stitches.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't have the stitches now. But I did have the stitches. And for a long time, the skin there in, you know, so a number of factors in different positions. Sometimes I felt the skin was not as elastic and it didn't move as well as the rest of it. I also noticed if I was in a little bit of a, say, in a mood, or I hadn't expressed, or something that I hadn't communicated to with my partner, that it seemed to get more sticky. It seemed to get tighter.
Yeah, definitely, Rhea. I definitely recognize that as well. The safer you feel and the more open you are, and like if you don't have any like contention but connection before you go into the experience together, it can change everything.
Yeah. So I did lots of work with castor oil scar remediation, particularly on the scar, and that is it's no longer like a, I'm imagining if you get, you would still see that there's potentially there were stitches, but the skin is not like stitches skin.
Does that make sense? Yeah, it does. Definitely. Yeah. It definitely makes a lot of sense. And my, like, I just feel like so many women go through this experience when they give birth. And like in my experience, I had kids, well, my daughter's 8. So 8 years ago, I had my daughter. And it was just like, bam, bam, thank you, ma'am. Like, quickly have your child and get out. It's like, wow, are you serious? Like, it's like they just want you, even though I was a part of like a midwifery group and had like, you know, was supposed to have like a water birth and this kind of stuff, it was still just really like, well, your water's broken. Let's induce you. Let's put you on this and that and get you in and get you out. And it's like, wow, there is no space for like just allowing it to happen naturally. You know, it was just very rushed and very like traumatic experience. And thankfully my second wasn't like that at all. But and like you, I didn't have stitches the second time round. But the first time I did, and it caused me a lot of problems for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that.
All right.
Yeah, traumatic birth story, it makes me, my heart, you know, a bit sore.
It is pretty sad.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, like now doing all the tantra and getting to know that, I'm just like, oh, I wish more women could have like more orgasmic births and just like such more pleasurable births. Like, I mean, I want to kind of get pregnant again just so I can have an orgasmic birth. No, I don't. I'm not sure I want to have kids again, more kids, but I don't think so. But like, it's just like, oh, I wish I could experience that. That would have been nice.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is nice. And you know, my birth certainly got better as, and not that any of them were awful, but they got better as I grew as well.
Yeah.
And having, you know, had two home births and not the last two either. My, you know, my second eldest son. And this was like, so this was a changing point for me, even though I kind of, I suppose, was maybe beginning when my eldest son is nearly 27. So it's a long time ago. So even though I knew some knowledge, I still was in the system, I suppose. And so my second son decided he would come at home really quickly.
Like, oh, wow.
And if I remember that I thought it was going to be soon, but the hospital said, no, you've got hours yet. I remember in myself, I remember going, like, I can't, this is close. And
wow,
he was born not long, very long after that. And
so you had him at home, like,
I had him at home. My good friend at the time was, you know, I said, he's coming. I had made a nest, and so when I felt this kind of a big movement, I suppose, and I made a noise, and I went back to my nest, and I said, he's coming. And my friend, you know, said, he's coming, and sort of, and delivered him. So it was a
You didn't even have any medical thing happening there. It was just like, oh, he's coming, let's catch him.
he's coming.
What a beautiful story.
But for me then, I suppose I realized that even though, like, so I, you know, for the others, just to be clear, I did then, you know, have a midwife and have whatever. But what it did for me was show me that I could do it. And I potentially knew my body better than someone at the hospital talking to me at the other end of the phone. I feel that that gave me a sense of knowing who I am and how I give birth. And so then I was then able to go in and for the next ones have, you know, employ a midwife and actually, you know, have it at home, have the babies at home and do, you know, with supervision, with, you know, care. And not that my last, just to be clear, my, like, because my midwife, my, because I, the, for my, my last baby who's 18, I know her, like, I know her, I still know her, I still see her, so she could listen. So I, you know, because she would tell the story that I gave her enough time to get her gloves on and then I went to her. So, but she had been looking after me for a very long time before that, so she kind of knew. It was baby number four. You know, I feel like the babies leave, you know, signs on the way out. The first one kind of, you know, has to do it all themselves.
And it's like, hey, do it like this for the second one.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like that. That's actually really cool. they probably do. Like, hey, it's like when you get pregnant for the second time too, or pregnant, like I haven't had a third or a fourth, but when I got pregnant the second time, it was like my body was just like, oh, yeah, we've done this before. It's fine. Like, you know, it kind of just knows what to do now.
And I think that we have moved away from having patience with first babies. Like, so it takes the body. So it's the first time. So when we're giving birth the first time or in labor, the cervix actually has to, so the two things it has to do is it has to ripen and then it opens. Yeah. And the first time it does it, it actually, that's a two-step process. So it has to fully ripen and then it can open.
Mm.
Once it has done that, it can do those two stages at the same time.
Mm.
So I feel like we put a lot of pressure on first-time mums on having to hurry when the body's doing this for the first time and it needs the space to be able to ripen in its own way, and then it will open once it's ripe enough. It's not a, I don't think we have enough patience.
I hear you in that, and I definitely, that was like my first experience, not having enough patience to, you know, for me to just allow my body to just go, okay, oh, that's what's happening, you know. Do you feel that if a woman, like, is more in tune with her body, she's able to, you know, understand that a bit better if she's going to have her first baby?
I think so, yeah, for sure. I think that more in tune you can be, There is, I think there's a balance. You need to be in tune, and then you also have to surrender.
Yeah.
So you kind of, there's, birthing is not a place for a control freak or like you kind of need to hand it over to the body and go, I'm in the wisdom of the eons of times that we've been birthing, like that collective consciousness.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Then we go to like hospital and they try to control the whole experience. They're like, come on, you're having your baby now. I'm going to induce you.
Yeah.
<It's> like, whoa, just chill for a second, right? Understandable if like, you know, there are complications and things like that. Oh, and I think that's the only time that we should have these things step in.
Yeah.
But having that experience myself and going through that really scary experience, it was full on. So, and I definitely learned a lot from that. I also learned after giving birth as well how neglected mums are from, you know, like we don't get the support that we need into healing our own bodies. It's just like, oh, 6-week checkup and you're all good to go. It's like, no. There's so much more to that, like that to being a mom and community, like, and having, you know, especially for first time moms, you just don't know what you're doing. And especially if you don't have a mom around to like help you either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or someone to know, like someone to guide you and they're a midwife or someone. I mean, I think lots of the
doula, like the doulas, they're really expensive. Yeah, doula, I think if you've got the money, definitely hire a doula. But, yeah, I noticed that in mine was like, oh, the system's just created, get you in, get you out and have a baby. And like I know in America, they charge so much money to have a baby. Like I think one lady spent like $70,000 just to have one kid. I was like, are you insane? And they were like, it was showing, I think it was on TikTok, and she kind of just showed all of the little charges that they charge you. I'm like, that is insane. It costs so much money to just have a kid.
Wow.
Yes. I don't know whether that's true or not.
That postpartum period,
I
think that the tribal community is, you know, that 6 weeks period is a really special time. They leave, you know, they put the mother and the baby for bonding, but also they look after the mother's belly and uterus and womb and body, like, you know, having massages, having, you know, putting the belly binding on, which is something I've only sort of recently heard about. But, you know, there's.
Yeah, I got one of those. Was a belly, like it was like a knicker thing and you'd pull it up and it actually tightened my belly and helped, because you get like contractions after having a baby for like weeks. And like I used to pull them on and it would suck in my belly. Thank God I did that, because who knows what my belly would look like now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I hear they do it like a ceremony as well. There's these special
wrappings
that comes around, and then they can loosen it, as you know. They also can be used, the same wraps, I think, as somebody is pregnant and as the baby grows, to support the pelvis as well. So I think, you know, in our minds we think we're, you know, evolved and we're moving forward. And then I think some of these tribal traditions, they knew something, they had wisdom.
Yeah, I definitely hear you in that. And there's just so much, like when you talk about it, it makes me feel just so much love and so much support, you know, and the journey of becoming a mother, like to going from somebody who has no kids and is free and all of this other kind of stuff to like really embodying, because it's such a quick transition. It's not like it's like one day you have this baby and you're growing it, but then all of a sudden it's in your arms and it's like, oh my God, I'm a mother. And now what do I do with this being? Like, and you're totally responsible.
Yeah.
And it's a freaky thing.
Yeah. I remember coming home with my first child going, whoa, what am I doing? Nobody checked me on the way out. Nobody said, are you sure you know what you're doing? Are you sure you're okay to go home? No, there was no tests, no nothing. I was just, you know, sent home to, you know, figure it out, really.
Yes. It's like crazy. It's like, so in some ways we have evolved and become better, I think, when like situations happen, but then in other ways we've kind of really disconnected and become very like the community is gone, the support is gone, the like sense of like having somebody really hold you in these spaces and to really journey you into becoming something new, you know, is completely gone. And when you said before, is like that, like how beautiful and how magical that would be just to have somebody sit there wrapping you and loving you while you're, do you know what I mean? Like putting in is like this really beautiful space, like so magical. My mind goes off into so much creativity.
Oh, look, I wonder, as you're talking, my mind is going to, how would it be if that's how we started? So, like, if we knew more about ecstatic births and then we moved into nurturing and looking after the mum and the bub for, you know, the first 6 weeks.
Of course.
Maybe forever, but in that really special, special time, because the body's been through a lot. It needs to heal. So if we took our time, how would that be with the children that we brought up? How would that be with the planet? And mothers having something to give instead of giving from a, you know, an already overloaded body and mind, giving from a space of generosity and love and caring and nurturing because it's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So they get out. Like they've got both happening. I wonder what our children and the next.
Exactly, because it's so exhausting. Like I remember just being so tired.
So tired.
And it is such an exhausting thing on the body. And then having to like, you know, now you're like with your partner or if you don't have a partner, you're on your own and you're having to like do all of that and feed a baby and be up overnight on your own or your partner's away because they're sleeping because they've got to get up to go to work the next day. Like it's really full on, you know, like not really giving that like bonding time because you're having to like make a bottle or, you know, having to clean the house or something. I don't know. But it's very exhausting. And like the support that you could definitely get from having just community. And this like beautiful journey that you talk about too.
Having the community for sure. Absolutely.
So I have another question for you. In your practice, like over the years of you doing all of these kinds of things, I know we've like spoken about the birth and like different types of orgasms and stuff like that. What is like the number one thing that you most commonly see come through
With women, what I most commonly see is a disconnect from their body. So whether that, I mean, that's a big label, whether that's because of disassociation or trauma or numbness or pain in sex or lack of sensation, lack of orgasm, lack of pleasure, whatever that is, that, you know, it's often a disconnect from the body. And back to the where we started at the beginning is really having space for pleasure, having space for sensations, having place, and I kind of feel like it's about putting our own oxygen mask on first, like looking after us first, and if we've got and keeping that bucket full, keeping our heart full, keeping whatever you know, what word you want to use, but you know, keeping ourselves full so that we have a space to give, and that when we're being intimate with a partner, then we have something to give, and we're not wanting to fix us. We're not wanting them to do something. We're not. It's not a chore because we're kind of loving life as well. So coming back to the body, I think is one of the things that I. And then it's a skill. It's a skill we learn. It's a skill we learn often is to, you know, most of us are not born great lovers, I don't think. There would probably be a few, but if I asked them, you know, what did they do? They probably did some research. They probably did some practice. They probably did some learning. They probably did something. I feel like, and probably in particular women, we feel like it's just something we should know. And when it's not, then you know, we think there's something wrong. Whereas it's a skill and it's a practice and it can be developed. It can, you know, it's never, you know, some of my, you know, I've had clients that are well into their 70s and they're still, I mean, and that's when, you know, they, when it was available to them for whatever reason to be able to learn and to grow and they can. So it's something to be developed always. It's not.
Yeah, I love that. Like you're saying, like any stage of life, it's something like you don't have to be, you know, just coming into your like learning about sex. You could also be at the end of it too, like at the end here where we can really awaken and come into the body and really start to have those experiences. It doesn't matter at what age you were at, right?
No. Yeah. And I imagine that, you know, if we were tribal, you know, not only ecstatic births, but there's probably ecstatic exits as well.
No, so, could you imagine? Oh my God, what a way to go.
I mean, if we think about it, that's how we got here. Yeah?
Yeah, it's so true. So true. It's trauma to come here, trauma to leave at this point in our a century of humanity, isn't it?
Yeah, but I wonder if there's a different possibility of how we could.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, now you've got me wondering, like, how magical. If I can't have an ecstatic birth and give birth in that way and have a pleasurable orgasm, maybe I can have an orgasm of my death. What if I orgasm to die? How great would that be?
I think that's, well, there is that sense. You know, the orgasmicness being one with the universe, being one.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Taking your last breath, or. And I imagine that would be, you know, consciousness.
Oh, what a beautiful experience would that be? Wow. Like the potential there is there, right? It's so awesome. I love it.
Well, I suppose all of these things, the thread is the fear of. And it's the fear of, if we can't orgasm, it's the fear of intimacy, fear of pleasure, or the fear, which I know sounds ridiculous, but, and, you know, having, you know, often when things don't go right with birthing, it's fear, it's a holding. And I would imagine death is the same, is that we're often afraid of death. But if we weren't afraid of death, if we thought, or if we had a sense that there was something else, then there's no reason for, you know, this to be the end of this chapter and a brand new chapter awakening. There's no reason for that to be any different.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because I'd never really been afraid of death.
No.
Like in my human experience. But when I went and had ayahuasca, it really showed me like, wow, I really don't need to be afraid of, like, you know, the end of my life, because I need to live it. You know, it's more, we should be more afraid that we're not living rather than getting to the end of, oh my God, I'm having to die. You know, afraid that we haven't really reached our full potential through our human experience, instead of like, oh my God, I'm so afraid of dying. No, oh my God, have you actually fucking lived? Do you know what I mean? Like, to the full potential of what this human experience is possible of, you know?
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and my thing around all of this, what you said before, I have to like, gather my thoughts again around women and just their experience. But it's going to come back to me. Every time you talk, I don't want to interrupt you, but I have a question. I'm like, oh my God, keep that question. No, it's gone now. Now I can't remember it.
It's okay. It'll come.
Oh, I'm really sorry. I did have a question for you though. Gone, absolutely gone. But what a beautiful experience, hey, this whole death thing. I love it.
It wasn't where I thought we would go. So it's amazing to have a really deep, real conversation.
Thank you. Oh, I love it too. It's so amazing. Oh, I wish this question would come back to me, because this is really profound, and it was just like so great to have, for women to just really understand. Oh, that's it. It's oh my God, what's going on? So do you feel as though women have you know how you're saying that women can be, no one's born a great lover, okay? I hear you in this. But do you feel that we are conditioned to be further away from our body as women?
For sure.
Why do you think that is?
Well, there's conditioning. I know that little girls are told not to touch themselves. It's naughty, it's dirty, whatever, a whole rhetoric of where that does not happen so much to little boys. So even just that alone, I think, is different. You know, we're told to put shirts on. We're told, you know, when you get to a certain, once things start to develop, you, all of a sudden we're different and you need to put a shirt on. You can't run around like that. You're doing da-da-da-da-da. People. So I think from really early on, because they show in the womb that all babies self-pleasure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, so, I didn't know that. That's news to me. Whoop.
So it's something we innately know, you know, either how to regulate or what feels good. We innately know that. And I think that gets taken away. And or we get told not to because it's dirty or we'll get in trouble or. And then I think that sets us up, I think. And then you add, you know, religion or I'm sure you have your own stories. You add all of those parts, and you know the vulva and the vagina. You've kind of got to have a look for it, don't you? They're not outward. So, I mean, lots of women that I see have not really seen themselves, and by seeing themselves, I mean like you know their own vulva, like not their face.
Yeah, I know, right?
And so I think we're not encouraged to, even if we weren't discouraged, we're probably not encouraged to look at it and see the different textures and colours and what's happening to it. And I think that then leads us into trouble because we then, you know, it leaves us vulnerable for abuse or something else. And we don't know ourselves. So how is it? It's really difficult to have orgasms and pleasure when you don't know yourself at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. So why do you think that it's conditioned this way?
Because if women knew that I don't know if you're fishing, but if women knew how...
I just want to hear your perception. I've got my own, but...
I'll tell you one. If we really understood what I said before about us being... You know, my experience and my knowledge is women who are turned on to life, have a much higher libido than most men.
I know. And
I think that, yeah, I know you know because I know. And that flips that, totally flips that paradigm. And I think that people are scared. If women know who they are and if we know that we are this sexual being full of life, full of pleasure, full of being turned on, full of aliveness, then that's scary for the people men who want to keep us down.
Do you think men are afraid of women who are empowered in their own sexuality or empowered in their, like, liberated in their bodies and this kind of stuff?
Yeah, some men, obviously. I think that potentially more, it's not the norm, so they don't know what to do. Depending on how, it's easy to say, well, and give them a name and say, really only promiscuous women like sex or...
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to dismiss that. It's easy. And I.
So, like, putting us into like little boxes, you know? Yeah, I hear you in that. Like, in my experience, I've had, I think, sometimes it can bring up men's wounding. Their own, like, mother wounds. So, in being. liberated in myself and my full spectrum of like what it means to be an actual feminine woman who has deep emotions, who expresses all of her emotions, is highly intuitive and is like fully liberated in her body and is open to receive like all kinds of orgasms. I think that could be really terrifying for a man because he, like you said, doesn't know how to handle it, but also he's been conditioned as well when it comes down to his mother and what she how she experienced the world with him and what he, how he had to suppress parts of himself, you know, or it could be many other like things, which has created a wound. So he can't actually withhold that woman in that full spectrum. He just, like, again, doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So it's scary. Yeah. It's fearful. Yeah. And then it's confronting to them because then they have to look at themselves and go, oh, my God, like, I don't know what to do with this. And then they run.
Yeah. Yeah, they run. But I guess there's a choice, isn't it? So you either do your work and stay or you run away. And
I know.
And it, but it's a paradigm flip. I mean, it's definitely a paradigm flip that women love sex.
I know. So in saying that, women love sex, right? I love this. Where is the line? Where's the line of it's too much like promiscuous stuff on like, let's say, social media with like OnlyFans and destroying relationships because she's too, you know, like where do you draw the line that that is sacred for my relationship, that I don't have to share absolutely everything with every other man? Because from, yeah, just what do you think of all of this?
My sense is we're allowed to, we can do whatever we, whatever feels authentic to our expression.
Yeah.
So my sense is that my expression could be different at any moment. And all of that is welcome. That's kind of what I mean by being fully expressed, is that, you know, in this moment I feel shy and I want tender and I want, and in this moment I want, you know, to be, you know, taken and enjoyed and delicious, like, or, and, you know, the roads in between. So for me it's having choice and having different levels of arousal, different availability of what can you have, what can you experience, and not just one road and one way and one. And I hope that we get to live on a planet, whether I get to see it or not, where women totally understand and appreciate who they are and how they are connected to the planet and the cosmos, and that, you know, that we give birth, we give love. I mean, we don't do it on our own, but we're the ones that carry it. So we are very...
And grow it, like, from a little tiny seed, we're, like, expansive. It's so expansive. We're the ones that grow that thing inside of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I... And then there's the balance. I mean, I don't have any particular things about OnlyFans or porn or, you know, people can... or Hollywood. I kind of put them both, all of them in the same category as entertainment.
Yeah.
They're not real. They're there for entertainment. They might be there for fun. Whatever you agree to with your relationship is what you agree to, what you're allowed to do, not allowed to do. That's, you know, that's between you and your partner. I feel like, if we come back to the essence of who we are, that is, it's not about sort of the external porn or the external things.
Mm-hmm.
It's about expressing how we are in this moment and having the freedom to do that, have the freedom in our body. To get there is a journey, I think, is a journey of self-discovery and a journey of removing the blocks and a journey of cultivating, like it sounds like you have, cultivating a life that is succulent and a life that is juicy and a life that is alive. It's not, we're not waiting to, you know, have a moment where we're living it all the time as our natural way of being. I'm not sure I totally answered your question.
No, I definitely hear what you're getting at is like you wanting a woman, in a way you have, like with women wanting to just be fully expressed at any time, at any given time, that they should have the freedom to do that. And then obviously, like if you are in a relationship, it's like having your own agreements and having your own like what you're willing to tolerate and what you're not willing to tolerate in a relationship, but your own personal perception on like OnlyFans and Hollywood and all these other kinds of things is like it's just entertainment. It's nothing, like there is no good or bad to it from what I'm picking up from you.
It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, have addictions to, I think, you know, the porn addiction has grown exponentially, and I think it's one of the most growing addictions on our planet currently is, you know, porn addiction, because of the level of access that people have to it and the ease of it. So a slightly different route is, you know, I think that too much porn, you know, and probably if I was, you know, really honest, probably too much Hollywood disconnects you from reality and disconnects you from your body and disconnects you from sensation. And then people have trouble connecting on a real basis because what they're used to is watching something. It makes us spectators. Both of them make us spectators. And we're watching somebody else have pleasure and it's not us. So it puts it outside. As opposed to when we're cultivating, you know, a sacred self-pleasure exercise with ourselves, with our body and sensations and breathing, that's bringing it home to us and cultivating more of an embodiment. I mean, not, I know people who use...
And the presence, like... From what I've found, like there are times where I've had like when I'm making love with somebody and I can tell their mind is not here. Their mind is somewhere else, or like they must be fantasizing about something else. And I'm like, I can't, because it disconnects me. It like makes me pull away. It makes me feel gross in the moment as well. I think just because I'm so, because of the all the things that I do, but I can definitely tell it's like you are disconnecting, then it's also disconnecting us in our experience, and then I feel gross and I really don't even want to have this experience with you, you know, because it's not connected. It's not connection. There's no connection to it. It's just like it becomes that animalistic. It's just we're doing and we're just trying to get off. It's not actually a beautiful journey and experience of the sacredness of the pleasure and the intimacy that we actually get to share and the energy on many levels, like you're saying, through those dimensions together. Like how beautiful does that experience get to be over just a, oh yeah, it's just like 5 seconds of this. It's like, no, it doesn't. Like sometimes that's great. Like, don't get me wrong. Like sometimes it's great to just pull it up and do it in the kitchen or something like that. But still there should be an element of connection, I believe. And I, in my own experience, in my own, from my own research and stuff like that with like porn and OnlyFans and especially social media, pulling men and women away from that connection and not being able, it's pulling us further and further away from these beautiful experiences that we can actually have together.
And that's what I'm hearing from you is that's variety. A quickie is amazing.
Oh, my God, so good.
But there's also, you know, as a sustainer, would it be a sustainable meal? Probably not.
Definitely not. It's like, yeah, I'm hungry today. Give it to me. I want the full 5-course meal with the wine.
Yep. Yeah.
It's going to cost you at least like 5 hours.
Yes. I think that people don't really know the experience of 3 and 5 hour sex dates. And I think they also think that what that means is that, you know, the kind of penis in vagina stuff is happening for 5 hours. That's not the case. You're curious and you're, you know, exploring each other's bodies and sensation and having, you know, you spoke before of the orgasms going from one to the other and cultivating that and moving that. That is, and my God, that is an ecstatic experience. That is
much better. It awakens you so much. There's been times as well where I've had experiences with an ex of mine, and he like would open my heart, so like the energy would come through him to me and my heart would open, like, because obviously there was stuck energy there for it to flow, right? And it would, so men taking you deeper, yeah, they can, especially if I've like you said, caught in my head, or I've had something that I haven't expressed, and we're then like, because I'm very in tune with my body, I can open really easy that way. But then, bam, out come the tears. And it's like, I gotta get me. Okay, we can go deeper now. Once those tears and once that heart opens, let's go. Let's keep going. Let's keep going deeper.
For sure. I think we don't know that it's a space for everything. It's a space for giving. It's a space for tears. It's a space for joy. It's a space for crankiness. It's a space for whatever is real for you, whatever is. And, you know, bringing all of yourself. And if you bring all of yourself, then all of those parts come out.
I think one thing that men may, like one thing that triggered something in me when you said all the spectrums of you with men especially, I think they have a lot of fear and shame around expressing their full sexuality, especially aggression, because aggression could, they're afraid of their own darkness, their own aggression that they can bring into sexuality. I mean, it can go too far, but sometimes the aggression actually is primal. It can really invigorate the experience. And I guess that's knowing in a man, where is it? Is him getting to know himself, right?
Yeah.
It's like, like really getting to understand himself.
Yeah. I mean, and the spaces, like what sort of spaces do we have for men to explore that and practice that and be safe with that? I mean, that's, I think one of the other, like living in a Western world, is we don't like to practice things. So practicing, you know, where do I feel? What do I do with my anger? What do I do with my aggression? In a really safe, those are all emotions. So what do I do with it in a safe, productive, effective way? You know, not just.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, I think, and that's also like him just understanding himself, I think, you know. It's like, where is that aggression coming from? Because that, I'm not sure whether it is really aggression or whether it's just that really energetic, masculine, it must be a dark energy, or it must be, it's just really heavy, but it's very like, oh, you know, very strong. And it's just such a beautiful experience for a woman at times. It can really awaken, it can really snap her out of like her getting stuck in her head, or, you know, him being able to push all that energy into her.
Yeah, and it's being present, isn't it? So it's being present enough to notice. And then somebody else's presence often can bring our own. And so I think sometimes, particularly in our busy, busy world, it takes a lot of presence. It takes a lot of that to hold, to get somebody out of their head, to hold them there, to, you know.
Then it gets to be that psychedelic experience where actually start to, like, trip and have full-on, like,
Yeah.
Almost like you're on drugs kind of experience.
Yeah.
You know, I've had that before too.
Yeah.
Where I've like been, I was like, oh my God, it feels like a snake's like going up my back. Yeah. It feels so good.
Yeah, the colors, the snakes, the visuals.
Oh my God, so good.
Yeah.
But that's how amazing women are. Like, I don't know if that happens on the men's. I think it does when he cultivates the sexual energy and like brings it up in himself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a beautiful book that I've read about some women who help men actually have those kinds of experiences just by giving them blowjobs. So it's very, very interesting.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, I think men's pleasure is underrated as well. Like I think that, you know, women, and I often say, you know, just because there's a hard phallus doesn't actually mean there's got to be something done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just a hard phallus. Like it's not, you know, just because you've got wet does not mean that something has to progress. Like there are many stages of arousal. There are many. And so I think men are pigeonholed as well into you have an erection, so it means you want this. You know, if we pull that back a bit, it's just an erection. And it's a sign of arousal. The sign of arousal. It doesn't actually mean something has to progress in that moment, and you can still take your time and you can still play and you can still, you know, have lots of pleasure in different stages of erections as well. You know, different, you know, when it's soft and when it's hard and when it, like, you know, there are different. Most men, I don't think, feel pleasure or know the pleasure of being touched or being in someone's mouth or when they're soft. They're just used to it being hard, and there's this whole other realm of soft kind of pleasure, soft exploration and curiosity that, you know, can lead anywhere. It doesn't have to, you know, we don't have to have, we can play much more.
Like, I hear what you're saying in this, because I think that's why massages are so amazing for men, because it really brings them into their body, but then it can also lead into like a beautiful sexual experience for them, because you've awakened something else in them, you know, with the dance of the hands on the body, you're awakening and different sensations in his body. To then lead to that, like, it could lead to that, but not necessarily always lead to that. But I feel like, again, men are so conditioned into it just being their phallus and having that inner vagina, and then it's not enough anymore, you know? Like, I feel like I've known men to be like highly addicted to porn and masturbate a lot, and like to the point where he can no longer feel. So then he has to start watching more fucked up things yes. that he probably yes. doesn't even yes. agree with. And then because he can't feel anymore, because he's so desensitized, because he's just caught in that. So far, so disconnected from the actual experience that he gets to have in his physical body, away from just that, you know.
And he's looking, the dopamine, he's looking for more, so therefore it needs to escalate. It's like no other drug, like all the other, like all the drugs, like when you kind of, whatever you're addicted to, it needs more and it needs more and it needs more until, so coming back to the body, like that's, you know, coming back here, going.
Could you say that being orgasmic and wanting that and having, like, you know, being like coming back to the body and feeling orgasmic in the body could be an addiction too, though? I'm just saying out there, I mean.
Maybe. So on its own, like, so, okay, maybe. I mean, I suppose anything can be an addiction, now that I'm thinking about it. But I suppose One of the differences might be is if it's cultivating and feeding you and bringing your heart open and giving you a fuel or a source, or you feel connected. I don't think, like on a sustainable long-term basis, I don't think things that we are necessarily addicted to give us that long-term.
Yeah, you're right. It's just like a short-term hit and then it's not enough anymore. Whereas like you have a cosmic orgasm, for example, and that can last days. It's not just like 20 minutes or whatever it is that normal. I mean, I don't know how long an average sex session is. I'm sure it's around 20, 30 minutes, which is totally not awesome for women at all. You know, for our body to awaken. And then like you've studied tantra in your sexology, I think, where it can take up to 45 minutes for a woman to really get any sort of arousal. So yeah, like that in it, oh my God, my point to that, I can't remember, but it's just this experience.
This is not long enough. We're not spending long enough. I think the point you're trying to make is it's not long enough. Yeah. 20 minutes is not long enough for an encounter.
Yeah. And again, like men are run hot and they like want it now. It's like, hold on, gotta just calm that down, be present. And like, let's go on this journey together and share the like kissing and the foreplay. And foreplay can start way outside the bedroom, like how I said when I was in the freaking shopping center. You know, and then one thing was another. It's like, hey, it's going here and it's going there, and now I'm eating an ice cream, and oh my God.
Well, I mean, one question I like to ask people is, when does sex begin and when does it finish?
Never.
I think we, you know, we are on the same page. We're on the same page.
Oh my God, I love it.
We're on the same page. It never, but it's the nuanced. It's not all of the pounding, but it's the nuances of the touch on the neck and the kiss on the cheek, or the words, or the look, or the fabric on the body. It's the nuances that, if you can, you know, if you can have the nuance down here, you can also then have the days and days of ecstasy. They flow together.
So with that, like in this, like as you describe it, like invigorates me so much. However, I have a question around this with like women and trust. So, you know, awakening that in the body for a woman, like in my own experience, is I have to be really connected to the person and they have to have that really grounded masculine presence for me to be able to ever like feel like I could trust in opening that to them. Because it's an experience, it's a journey where we get to share so much more than just this quick, how are you going, see you later kind of experience.
And I feel that, well, not that I think there's, you know, anything wrong with just, you know, putting body parts together, but I think my sense is when you're having the sort of lovemaking sexual experiences that you're talking about, we're so open and we're so vulnerable, and we're sharing on a physical level. We're sharing our emotional bodies, our sexual bodies, our erotic bodies, our soul. Like we're connected everywhere. That is way beyond. So you want to, if that's the sort of experience you want, you kind of want to be connected to someone and know that they have your back. If you're having a one-night stand, you probably don't want all of that. You probably just want to put parts together and have a release and whatever, and if it's, and then you go home.
Yeah.
But I
just think boring.
for me. Yeah, it's not my.
Yeah,
it's not my,
I think once you awaken and alive in something within you, it's like, again, you can still have those beautiful experiences, like not a one night stand with just anybody, but with like, let's say somebody that you have opened up to, where it can be just that quick, how you going, bang, I'm alive right now in my body and come get me kind of thing. compared to just, I just met you and we're going to have sex. And how disconnected.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's how I feel. And sometimes I've been a little bit jealous of having friends that can kind of move really quickly through people and through relating, and it's not kind of my way of going. And I realized it's just not my way of going. It's not how I have general friends. It's not how I want sexual friends. It's not how I am. I'm, you know, kind of really deep and serious, and I love fun, and I'm, you know, all of those things. But I like to trust people, and I like to know people, and I like to have. So for me, that's the sort of experiences that I want.
Yeah, you and I think we're very similar in that way. It's like I'm inviting you into my body. Like I'm inviting you into everything that the possibilities that I have in me, I'm inviting you to come join me and to bring me deeper. It's like, are you the person to do that? Because like I've been celibate for a while now, and it's a beautiful journey to be celibate while you're doing this, you know, while you're doing all of these practices and stuff like that. Like I've taken myself on like little journeys as well, which was absolutely amazing, and cervical orgasms and stuff like that, and internal vaginal orgasms way outside, and energetic orgasms outside of just stimulating the clitoris, right? Oh, goodness me, my point to all of that. Oh, I got lost.
Knowing yourself, I think it's what you're knowing. Yeah, knowing just like the journey of celibacy and the journey of, yeah, like cultivating that.
Yeah, and like, oh, inviting that person in. It's like, okay, well, it's almost like, are you worthy enough to?
For sure. Absolutely.
Are you worthy enough to come on this like really profound journey with me? Because you know what? I really love myself and I really respect myself, and I really just like, I know what I can bring. That it's like,
yep.
You know, I have to really like you and really trust you. And where are you on that scale? You know, I've kind of gotten to that place, especially after my recent relationship and stuff like that. It's like, okay, you know, I'm, it's like really just loving myself and creating that beautiful cultivation inside me right now. But I hear you in this as well with the, it's like, it's deep. It's not just something superficial. For me, and by the sounds of it, for you either. No. You know?
No. And it raises the bar. I think as women grow in themselves and they learn, what you will accept becomes higher.
Yeah. You
know that I can have an amazing time on my own. So if you're not amazing, then I'm on there. Like, it's a bit like having, you know, at home, I have an amazing, you know, lamb roast, and you want to give me fast food. I'm going to go home and have my dinner. Thanks very much, because it's amazing. Well, thanks for the offer. Yeah.
She's selfish. Yeah, I am to a degree.
Well, don't you think we should be? Don't you think we should be?
Oh, so like not in a non-egotistical, narcissistic way. Yeah. Sure, but like selfish to want to be able to have that experience, yes, because of how beautiful and magical and amazing we are as women, yes, that we should have that bar so much higher than what we do, and we just give it away so freely most of the time, like my younger self. God, shame on her, but... forgiveness there. There's a lot of forgiveness there, and a lot of like lessons learned, and a lot of like, wow, okay, I really did not honor myself. I really did not respect myself. I really did not love myself. But now it's like I know the possibilities of what's available to me. And yes. I think that's the thing. I think that women who are still stuck in that I'll just give it away and pleasing men, and it just has to be about me pleasing him. And it's like, no, like it gets to be so much more than that. And you deserve that. He deserves that. We both deserve that, to be able to have a beautiful conjoined experience where we get to share that journey together instead of it just being a give or take.
And here's to, you know, teaching or exploring for women to know that in themselves and to have and to have that empowerment and that trust in themselves, come back to trust, because that's what it's about. And if you can trust yourself that you will look after yourself and you know yourself, then you can do that. And you can trust that I don't need to give this, I don't need to have this experience. I will wait and have a really great experience because I know that's what I want. And if I'm, you know, if I'm feeling, you know, I don't know, horny or I'm feeling like I need a release, then I can do that on my own.
Yeah.
I can do that. I don't need to have somebody else to do that. I can share magical experiences with myself and I can share magical experiences with other people.
Yeah, exactly right. And that takes time and dedication and like you being a mother and me being a mother, like we got to take that time out sometimes. It's like we got to put that's a little schedule in the diary.
Yes.
I do my other practices during the day, like in the morning and that kind of stuff. Yes. But when I really want to sit and cultivate like energy and really come into that erotic eroticism within my own body, it takes time. I need to put that time aside for me. And it's important that I do.
It makes
me a better mother, that's for sure.
Yes,
not a cranky mother.
Yes, a better mother, a better human, a better, all the betters.
Oh, yeah, and a better lover, like you said earlier on.
Yeah. You know,
sorry to cut you off there. Like you said there earlier on with the, like, giving back to ourselves and filling our own cup up, because a lot of women don't.
No, and life tends to go smoother that way because people can see you, people can feel you, and they can – and it's smooth and you know, life goes differently when you're in tune with your own, you know, sexuality, eroticism. I think the benefits of making time and scheduling, I know people don't like scheduling, but if they don't have to do that, you know, whatever, you know, that's not how my life works. I'm busy. I need to schedule stuff. Sometimes I get spontaneous time, but lots of times I need to schedule.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's not bad to schedule in things. I think we get, like you said, afraid of having to like actually schedule that time in for ourselves. And or like, I think from what I can see is like, you're just so content. Like you love hearing about those. You're like, yeah, I want to have those kinds of experiences, but you know what? I don't have the time for that. It's like, neither do I. But I have to, because it's like giving back to myself. Do you know what I mean? It's like you have to be a better person, to be a better me is to give to me, to be a better lover, to be a better person. And I drifted in my recent relationship, drifted so far away from myself that I was just, you know, that I wasn't embodied in myself, you know, and it wasn't good. And I didn't recognize or realize that until the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's really sad that I had to go through that and that whole experience to really come back around to realize, wow, I actually stepped further away from myself instead of what everything that I know, even though I was still doing all of my stuff, but I was like prioritizing other people above myself and not really giving myself that space and time to really connect with just me, you know. But like everything's a lesson and an experience, and I had to learn that through a very, very hard experience.
Well, my hat goes off to you for learning it. It's a hard experience to learn, so.
Oh, it's a lesson. So like in my own experience is to like tell women like, this, even if you are in your relationship now, is to do it now. Don't wait until it just is not great anymore, you know? And then you're just so far disconnected from yourself and your partner, and like, then it just doesn't end up awesome for you. And then we kind of repeat the pattern because we're so content in that. Do you know what I mean? And we don't, I think as mothers, you can get really content into just being a mother instead of actually you're still an orgasmic being as a mother.
Yeah. We're putting our energy into something else, aren't we? So we're sort of sublimating instead of, you know, keeping some of us for ourselves.
And that's important as a mother, I think, sure. Don't you think?
Absolutely. I think, as you're saying, it takes time and it takes cultivating. But I think in society where we're rewarded for giving to other people, like being busy, giving to other people. Mm. And so unless we kind of find the balance in there or unless we kind of pull back, you know, sometimes it's society doesn't really, we get frowned upon. But as a human and as a giver of, you know, as a wife, as a lover, as a parent, being fulfilled is really, really important.
Oh, so important. Definitely. I definitely hear you in that and agree with you so much. Yeah, and the one thing that brings back to everything that you were speaking about earlier, about bringing back to the body and stuff like that, I think, like, women's intuitive abilities, like our intuition, you know, how you're saying that you come into the body and you're really embodied and you can be this orgasmic being, but then the fear, like some men can fear that, they can also fear our capabilities in our intuitive abilities and our psychic abilities and picking up things that, you know, men miss. And that's proven by science. That's even proven in science that we women have those abilities, that sometimes at nighttime, if we're walking down certain streets, they've actually studied that most women would not walk down a certain street. And the only reason they didn't walk down that street was because there were actually pedophiles like living on that street. And we intuitively, however, knew, and they studied it, that women would walk around without even knowing that why they wouldn't walk down that street. I was like, wow, that's incredible. Yeah. Can't remember where I got that from, so don't, like, you're going to have to look it up yourself.
But when it comes back to trust, doesn't it? It comes back to trust. If I trust myself, I trust myself to, that doesn't feel right to go that way, so I'll go this way. If that comes back to cultivating that trust and cultivating that sense of who we are, because with that, then we can decide, well, that we won't go that way, we'll go that way, or we'll trusting ourselves.
Yeah, I definitely, and like you said, it's the embodiment, and that can only happen when we have, like, to a degree, I think it can always happen because we're naturally that way, but when we're more embodied, we're more aware of it, and we can consciously be like, oh, okay, that is not good for me.
Yeah, we can listen. Yeah, we can listen to ourselves. Yeah.
Because I can see that in you, like, when you talk. I'm like, oh, I'm listening. And like, you said, I trust myself, and I trusted myself when I was having my, you know, birth and all of this other kind of stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's because you were just like so embodied in your own body that you really just like home. This is our home. Yeah, you know, I love that. It's such a beautiful thing for you.
Thank you. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I love that you get to be that and also get to share that and express that with other women. So it's like you're giving other women permission to be that, so then they too can trust themselves in these kinds of experiences too, and to not just like be told outside of yourself that, hey, that it has to be this way. No, I know me. Yeah. And coming home.
I'm my own sovereignty, which it sounds like that's been your journey as well, is coming home to your own sovereignty.
Definitely. It's been a, like, up-down journey.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much. And I have one other question for you. leaving this beautiful, these beautiful ladies who have spent a long time listening to us and hopefully get so much out of this.
Great.
What is one thing that you believe all women should know right now in this time and day and age that you would love to leave them with? A bit of wisdom.
One thing that they should know.
That's going to like help them.
I feel that the biggest part to know is their anatomy, like know how they work, know how they, because information is empowerment, know how they, I've already spoken about this being, normally I probably would have said, you know, how amazing and how sexual we are. So that's probably what I would have said. But given that I've already said that, knowing ourselves and sometimes, you're starting really simply, like just holding your yoni, your vulva, just holding and holding your heart and bringing that connection together. So sometimes I think we also think it needs to be really grand and audacious, and we're just starting to hold ourselves and starting to feel the blood flow, starting to feel the sensation, starting to kind of see what's happening. I think knowing one's own self would be the next thing.
Yeah,
because then you will get to see that we're totally sexual creatures.
That women are totally sexual creatures. We all are.
Totally. But I think, you know, men, I mean, and you know, yeah, I just, men just have a different rhetoric than us.
Definitely. I agree with you that they do. Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much for giving that to all of these beautiful women who are going to listen to this and stay right till the end with us, that you've left them that with that really beautiful piece of information. And I couldn't agree more with you.
I really love the depth that we've gone to and the terrain that we've gone. I really, and the surprises for me too. I love it. It's been great.
Oh,
thank you.
I love it. Beautiful. I love it. And some of that, I love all the things that you've said, and you've just really invigorated my soul. So I'm very, very grateful to you and very grateful to share your wisdom and knowledge and your experiences as well in your life. And hopefully we, through this experience together, can help other women have their beautiful experience as well.
Sure.
So I will be leaving all of your details as well. So if anyone wants to get in contact with Myola, we'll be under the podcast. So if you want to reach out to her and start connecting with like your yoni and your sexuality and just anything that we've spoken about on this podcast as well, like just reach out to her because she's amazing. And yeah, I'm so grateful. And so it's been such a pleasure to have you on.
Amazing. It's been really amazing. Thank you so much for your generosity. Beautiful.
No, it's honestly